refrigerators full of blood, another century spent pointing guns at anything that moves. Sometimes I worry that I've lost the plot, my twitching muscles tease my flipping thoughts. I never really dreamed of heaven.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Julianne Schober, who is Director of the Center for Asian Research and co-director of the Graduate Studies in Religious Studies at Arizona State University. She's a professor of religious studies and an anthropologist of religion who works on Theravada Buddhist practice in Southeast Asia, especially Burma, Myanmar, and is affiliated with the Center for the Study of Religion and Conflict. Her new book is Modern Buddhist Conjunctures in Myanmar: Cultural Narratives, Colonial Legacies, and Civil Society. Welcome to Background Briefing, Julianne Schober.
Welcome to you, Ian. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
And Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is in Burma, which is, for all intents and purposes, been closed particularly to the United States and has endured a 50-year military dictatorship, a very brutal one. Apparently, there is a sort of something in the wind. She met with Burmese President Thein Sein and then later with, of course, the pro-democracy leader Aung San Suu Kyi, who apparently Mrs. Clinton has always admired. What is your basic sense of whether this country is really turning in its direction away from military repression towards some glimmering of improvements?
Well, that's not an easy question to answer. I think Aung San Suu Kyi herself has called it an occasion for cautious optimism, and I think that's probably a fairly realistic assessment. From my point of view, there are a number of different factors coming together, and perhaps they came to the surface at the recent meeting of the nations of Southeast Asia, the Association of Nations of Southeast Asia, where President Obama also attended in Bali, and it appears that at that meeting, Myanmar or Burma once again put forward that it wants to be hosting these meetings in a couple of years' time, and I think much of the subsequent discussions were occasioned by that renewed pitch to take on a leadership position in that regional association.
So, Julianne Schober, what do you think it has allowed this general, who is now the leader, to take this course? Because not only is he has somehow been able to outmaneuver the hardline generals who have been running the place for the last 50 years, who are still in positions below him. And in the broader context, of course, the Chinese are interpreting this as there's been some actually quite hostile remarks on Chinese media about the U.S. meddling. So if the Chinese feel that the U.S. is trying to sort of move in on their turf, and they have supported these hardline generals, my assumption would be then that this moderate general, if he is indeed as he appears to be, has to look over his shoulder.
Well, I think that's the nature of politics in Burma. I think nothing is very certain except a certain sense of uncertainty. And he appears to be of a different generation in that his predecessor was older and had clearly a different outlook on politics and the practice of politics, as well as a vision for the nation's future. I think this new leader is of the same generation, roughly, as Aung San Suu Kyi, and so perhaps is in a better position to share some fundamental concerns about the nation's future with her. She seems to think of him as a military general, clearly. Her own father is credited as the founder of the Burmese military. And she's always said that the military needed to be part of a national reconciliation. And I think at the same time, it's not as though, the new president has suddenly decided that he's going to implement rapid change. We are still looking at a long road ahead.
Well, but what has been going on, though, for the last 50 years, since 1962, when the military took over, has been a tremendous amount of brutality, ethnic warfare, the escalating in the protests that took place since Aung San Suu Kyi won the election and then was denied the 1990 elections, which she is supposedly won. The military refused to accept results. Then more recently, they even turned on the Buddhist monks who, my understanding, and since you are a student of both Burma and Buddhism, are deeply revered. They're in the DNA of that country. So it seems that the regime from which this general comes from is capable of the worst brutality. They have indicated a crazy kind of military megalomania by building this peculiar fortress-type city in the middle of nowhere, Ne Puy Thaw. Now, apparently, one of the main parts on the agenda with Secretary of State in discussing improving ties has been about the generals making deals with the North Koreans to get nuclear weapons. So that's surreal. Yeah. A poor country like this having a nuclear weapons program?
Yeah, that has been talked about for some time, there have been some pictures on the internet about supposed sites under construction, and there have been ships, I suppose, that have been said to be carrying nuclear material that then were destined for Burma but turned around and so forth. So this, I can't assess to the extent to which there is a reality to all of this nuclear ambition or to what extent that is a ploy in negotiating politics. I think that, it's true that since 88, when there was a large-scale popular uprising that was crushed by the military. Military regimes in Burma since even before 88, since 62, have increasingly become beholden to their neighbors in China. But I think there's also a desire among the Burmese to manage that degree of dependency. And so for the Burmese to be able to open up to international investments and to forge closer ties with the U.S. is a welcome opportunity. They have much to gain from this. And I think Clinton very astutely offered a review of the current sanctions as Burma moves towards implementing greater reforms for individual freedom and so forth. So this is a process. This is not going to be a quick solution. Yes, it's true. The most recent civil uprising. Has been led by monks and was brutally put down by the military. And it's also clear that there are a number of different voices within that military. I think we can see generational changes by now, and I think it's also clear that there have been those who are extreme hardliners and others who were more interested in promoting a national reconciliation and forming a nation that would include minorities or nationalities, ethnic groups that are located mostly on the periphery of the nation, and that have always been reticent to join the national vision, because often they are not only victims of war, but even after peace treaties, they remain basically second-class citizens with less access to whatever the state has to offer its citizens in a country like Burma.
Again, I'm speaking with Julianne Schober, who is the director of the Center for Asian Research and co-director of Graduate Studies in Religious Studies at Arizona State University. She's the author of Modern Buddhist Conjectures in Myanmar, Cultural Narratives, Colonial Legacies, and Civil Societies. So as I mentioned, Julianne, the Chinese state media have been a little bit hysterical and quite bombastic. They're not saying that there's anything wrong with the U.S. Improving relations with Burma, Myanmar, but they also warning the U.S. not to try and horn in on their kind of monopoly. Now, recently, a big hydroelectric project that the Chinese invested in was cancelled. So it would seem to me that there are, what you suggested, that the Burmese don't want to become a client of the Chinese. That may be a part of that. I'd like to get your input on that. But what is going ahead is this pipeline from all the way through from the south to the north, all the way through Burma into China, so that the Chinese don't have to ship their oil from the Middle East all the way around through the Straits of Malacca and up through the Pacific.
Correct. So if the dam was halted in order to lessen the negative impact of the construction of the dam on ethnic minorities, then, and if that was a concession to the peace process and to the national reconciliation, one could say that the Chinese were the losers in that concession, because they were going to be the primary beneficiary from the electricity generated. On the other hand, I think that loss got compensated with greater revenues on the oil that the Chinese are receiving from the Andaman Sea, and the pipeline goes through Burma North, as you said, into China. So it's not as though ties are completely severed in this relationship. Perhaps there's only a bit greater diversification, but I don't think that Burma is about to stop its trade with China and vice versa. But I think Burma does want to have a greater presence regionally with other nations bordering on the Mekong River. And Burma has a lot to offer in terms of its natural resources and a large labor force and so forth. So I think investors are ready and hope for an opening up in the near future.
Well, Julianne Schober, the Chinese have, of course, fairly got their foot in the door for some time. There's no question about that. But it's worth mentioning that Chevron of California, the oil company, has a 28% share in a big gas project, which it inherited when it bought Unocal. So it's not as if there's nobody from the West in there. And clearly this trip by Secretary of State Clinton is meant to not just improve ties, but also open up business opportunities. Just briefly, my understanding of the agenda that was discussed between Hillary Clinton and the Burmese leader were that the Burma, she urged Burma to cut its illicit ties with North Korea and fess up on the what the nuclear program's about, to end ethnic violence, and to start a joint search for the remains of U.S. troops killed in World War II. She also passed on a letter to President Thein Sein from President Obama. So I'm surprised about the World War II remains. That,
I am too. I suppose there are. I suppose this has to some extent become part of U.S. national policy, that in their international dealings there is always an attempt to bring back home fallen soldiers. But that was part of that conversation.
But I've understood, Julian Schober, that to some extent, even though they're a horrible government, treat their people brutally, and these generals and their ridiculous kleptocratic families have stolen the country blind. They have a certain leverage, don't they? They can play India off against China, and now there's a third party involved. Is that a strategy of Burma? In other words, they're sandwiched between two big rival emerging Asian powers, and the older hegemon now is trying to put his foot in the door.
I think that is part of I think that the Burmese government in general is engaged in a very complex strategy to move some pieces in the carefully strategized chess game here. And clearly bringing in another superpower is part of that equation. But also, I think to some extent, a certain recognition that Burma has to envision a new kind of future for itself, in the sense that it has to participate in digital revolutions and the kinds of economic changes that engenders. It's economically already far behind what it was in the 1950s and early 60s. So there is much to be made up for here, and I think there is a certain interest in trying to make this happen at this point. So it's a complex arena here, and allowing Aung San Suu Kyi a certain degree of freedom, permitting some, giving some permission to public protests, very limited and so forth, and lifting some restrictions on the press and so on. That is all part and parcel of that, and we'll just have to see the extent to which this is actually allowed to become realized, or whether there is going to be some knee-jerk reaction and things suddenly shut down again. We hope that that's not the case, but it will take some time to ascertain.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Julian Schober.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Julian Schober, who is director of the Center for Asian Research and co-director of Graduate Studies in Religious Studies at Arizona State University. She's a professor of religious studies and an anthropologist of religion who works on Theravada Buddhist practices in Southeast Asia, especially in Burma, Myanmar, and is affiliated with the Center for the Study of Religion and Conflict. Her new book is Modern Buddhist Conjunctions in Myanmar, Cultural Narratives, Colonial Legacies, and Civil Societies. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the Amnesty International report that accuses Saudi Arabia of repression after the Arab Spring.
When days come for-